You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
That's got good interaction with this, and oh, this has got good interaction with that, and oh, that might be fun.
I just would go lose my mind if I played it all the time.
LSV, who was your boy, your donkey.
You know, you strike people as shiesty.
We're all not perfect out there in the world.
That was a shoestring budget if I've ever seen one.
58 episodes we've been doing tryhards, and you still haven't learned.
I might fly out to WotC and just hold a picket sign.
See, this is why you should be playing. This is why you should be playing, because you know exactly what should happen.
Now, if you're in the state of Illinois, we're used to only getting that good ruling if you've donated to the judge's political campaign. Oh, you brave soul. It's the latest edition of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease along with Brian Tibbetts and Matt Hurley. Coming up on this episode, what we're most looking forward to before being devastated hour by hour. How do you get the most out of your intellectual property? And what exactly happened at the art show in Vegas? Matt has all the details coming up in just a bit. We get it started, though, with what are we drinking? Matt, you've been chomping at the bit saying you've got something special going down your throat as opposed to going in other areas. What are you drinking tonight?
So I am drinking something that you guys were supposed to enjoy with me, but you decided not to come down for the SCG, drinking the Founders Kentucky Breakfast Stout. Oh, my God, is it amazing. It is one of the best beers I've ever had, but you would think at, you know, between $15 and $20 for a 12-ounce bottle, it should be.
That sounds amazing, and I've had a lot of stuff from Founders. They never disappoint. Brian, what are you having tonight? More Zima?
I needed to ramp this up a little bit. I am off Zima, thank goodness. But I did consume my fair share of beers on Saturday that I will talk about in a little bit, so needed to ramp it up a little bit because the wife is out of town. So I've got both girls in the house by myself. And as much fun as we are having, it's gin and tonic time.
I was wondering if that was the case when you had to go to the freezer for more ice before we started the cast tonight.
Yes.
Glad to see that that was the case. Left Hand Brewing. They've done some things that I have been a fan of in the past. And they've done some things that I have not been a fan of in the past. Had an opportunity to pick up their Braveheart Nitro Scottish Ale, and this is going to be a good one, I can tell. It's got that kind of, like the Scottish ales, it's got that malty little sweetness, but it's got a bready flavor to it as well. So we'll see how it goes as I get to the bottom of the bottle. The Left Hand Brewing Braveheart Nitro Scottish Style Ale here this evening as we get this cast started. Brian, what magic did you play? You were a little bit more on the casual end of the spectrum this week.
I was. This was kind of breaking new territory for me. I've always been kind of just either poo-pooing or just a complete and utter noob at Commander / EDH. I'm kind of glad that the crew here in Galesburg calls it EDH still. However, there was one gentleman from the play group here who is getting married this coming weekend and had his bachelor party this last Saturday. And just like a good Magic player, what did this bachelor party consist of? Cards and drinks and really, really good food. So, of course, I said, yes, I'll get into that, and was told by Dave Nash, one of the hosts of the party, hey, you better get a commander deck together because that's basically what we're doing. So I basically said, you know what? That's true. I need to get a commander deck together. So over the course of the last week and a half, since last cast, really, I've been trying to assemble a general that I felt was kind of in my play pattern, somebody I'd like to go with and that I had cards for. I didn't want to have to do a lot of work ordering cards and et cetera, et cetera. Ended up with Alicia, who smiles at death. This is a Mardu colors, and I was thinking that Mardu tokens deck that I've been on, I can just kind of pilfer cards from that deck from what I need to. But actually, guys, I was kind of expecting this to be more of a job than it was, and it's still a job. Putting together an EDH deck is still a job. The balance of lands and creatures and enchantments, sorceries, instants, all that stuff, it's work. But it is a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be. You know, going through cards that I would never have kind of thought of in a competitive deck, saying, oh, that's got good interaction with this, and oh, this has got good interaction with that, and oh, that might be fun. So putting that together was actually a really, really good, kind of got the brewer in me a little excited for a while there. So sleeve that up. One game had absolutely no game with the guys that we played against, and then one game I had a very, very timely, selfless spirit on the board when someone tried to wrath the board. So I was able to sacrifice, keep my board, and then assemble a huge army and just pick everybody off and took that one down. So it was really, really fun. I love to see all the commanders people are playing. I love to see how all in people are with EDH. There was one gentleman, the future groom, I might add, Michael Bergman, had something like 5 or 6 EDH decks. And I'm just thinking to myself, wow. Good for you. That's an investment. He's doing it right. It was a lot of fun. We had at 1.3 tables of EDH going. So it was a lot of people, a lot of fun. Got a couple games in a standard as well. And then later, after I had to leave early because my wife was flying out for this trip, they pulled out a cube and they said that was just an absolute ball. So they're going to try to get together and do that. So I'm looking forward to doing that with those guys in the future. But yeah, so don't call me a convert yet, but EDH was a lot more fun than I remember it being in the past, and I'm going to keep this Alicia deck sleeved up for quite some time.
Now, as part of the fun, the beer that you said you had, you promised us a beer report.
Of course. So here's the thing. One of the gentlemen, Eric, who is a driver at the G&M distributor, the Bud distributor here in town, gets all kinds of crazy deals on stuff. So they were drinking, you know, most of the guys there had the Bud Light, Anheuser-Busch products, which is great. And then over the course of the week, as we were planning things, it was, okay, well, what are you going to be drinking? What are you going to be drinking? One guy piped up and said, I would love some Michelob. And I'm thinking that Phil Collins song in the back of my mind, like, I'll be coming in the air tonight. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to buy Michelob for Zach, and then I'm going to get myself some IPA, whatever. I went with the Dark Horse IPA from Crooked Tree Brewing Company, one of my favorites. And ended up polishing off that entire six-pack, plus a couple Michelobes, probably plus another Bud Light or two. And then did a shot of Fireball at one point during the day. Thinking, man, is it only 8 o'clock right now? I'm like, I really have to get home because my wife leaves for the airport in like 45 minutes. So it was one of those, whoops. So it was an early night for me. Unfortunately, I'd love to stay and play a little bit more. Michelob's not as bad as I remember it being. It's just fine. You know, it's fine. I mean, it's not 1989, but it's fine.
I feel like the educational film strip should sound with the little boing, and with that shot of Fireball began Brian's solo parenting for the weekend. Will his daughters be scarred from this experience going forward, or will they make it through? Is this the moment?
Tune into therapy in 10 years and find out.
Tune in 11 years to find out if one of them takes to the pole as a result of decisions made this weekend.
I need another G&T already.
Yeah, I was going to say, we may have to just fly some immediate help up to Brian for these next couple of days. Matt, while Brian was busy playing Commander and loving it, you were busy skulking around a couple LGSs and you weren't happy with the way it went. What's up?
Well, the skulking happened today, but all weekend, sleeved up the what I had. Brian, you sent me those cards, and I sleeved up what I had of the Bant taking turns. I played it online last week and, you know, made the comment it was really slow. Bunch of my friends from down here that play, they were actually going up to the limited GP up in Cleveland. So we got together, I think it was Thursday night. I kind of goldfished out with them, played some quick matches of Modern right after work at like 4 o'clock or 4:30 or so. And I got to say that Bant taking turns is just not my thing. Brian, I appreciate you sending me the cards, but I'm probably going to send them right back. It's so – I like – the deck is good. It's got legs. I assume if I goldfished out 200 times, I would cut some time off, but it's so slow in winning. It's not like the other decks where you basically just take 40 turns in a row. This is like you set up your defenses, you take a couple extra turns, and then – you let them go, and they, or during those couple extra turns, you use your Nissa ability and you attack him for 15 or something. Then if they have a combat trick, you let them go again, and they're basically like recovering from that. So it's a lot slower than just the all-in kind of glass cannon combos that the mono blue are, or the blue-black ones. I'm very intrigued by this black-white smallpox deck, and we can discuss that a little bit, Sean, because I know that warms the warms your heart a little bit.
Curious though, you knew that Band Taking Turns deck isn't kind of like an instant kill when you miracle temporal mastery or you're able to cast a time warp and stuff. You knew it's kind of a grindier deck, or were you under the impression that it was a faster kill?
I attribute some of it to me just being a little bit slower at Magic Online than a lot of players because I don't play it all the time. But even in paper, I mean, that thing was atrociously slow. There's a lot of play to it. There's a lot of moving parts. But overall, it's slow. I mean, there's no other word for it. It wins. It can win pretty consistently. It's just really, really just crazy. You ever play a deck where you're just like, man, that deck is good and I like it, but I just would go lose my mind if I played it all the time. I've been studying this black-white smallpox. One of the guys actually took it up to the GP because he was going to do nothing but side events. His tournament report on it was people do not know how to play against it. He was able to take down like 3 side events with it, including, I believe, one, not the classics, but it was one of the kind of like challenges, I think they call them, or whatever it is at the GPs. To go back to what Sean was talking about, my wonderful LGS experience today. So I've been sorting my cards and realize I'm like, man, a lot of these cards are in like cardboard boxes that, you know, like I bought them from people and they came from their basement and they're just like in like these shoe boxes and all this random stuff. I realized I'm like, I don't have enough 5K. So I ran over the LGS. This is one I'd never been to. Really, really nice on the inside. It was mostly focused on comics and games, but they had, I would say, 24, 30 feet of Magic cards, you know, singles. One of the most unique play areas I've ever seen where it's kind of like behind glass. It's behind those big glass panes. You actually open a door to walk into there, and it's almost completely soundproof inside there. But the rest of the shop isn't bothered by these tables. I walk in, I kind of browse the games a little bit. I browse, I ask him, I'm like, hey, where's your 5Ks at? And he points them over there. I grab the 5Ks and I'm looking through the games. And I've mentioned to you guys, I think, I recently got the Talisman 4th Edition board game. And that was always a favorite. When I was in Quincy, I always loved playing Talisman. And I know, Sean, you always love playing it, too, with Corson and everybody.
I love playing the game. It just has the worst endgame mechanic for a great game ever.
Yeah. So they actually discontinued Talisman about 6 months ago, maybe. Because it was discontinued, I was able to pick up the core set, one of the expansions, and then the final expansion, which actually solved your problem, Sean, where it's now it completely changed up the board. It's called Cataclysm, and not to get into the board game area, but it's it changed a lot of the board itself and a lot of the end game. So I've been looking for the expansions, and some of the expansions are like $150 on eBay and Amazon. I saw a couple of the expansions there. I'm like, oh sweet. I'm like, I saw 3 specifically I didn't have. So I walked up and I was like, hey, I've got some Magic cards in my car. I'm like, would you guys be interested in making a trade? Trade in some Magic cards, and I'm interested in several of your expansions there. And the guy's like, well, you'll have to talk to the owner. He's like, what kind do you have? He's like, I don't want junk. That's what the guy behind the counter says. And I thought immediately, I'm like, oh, great. This is going to be awful. So I route to my car, and all I have is my Legacy binder. So I take it in. I'm like, look, I've got all these dual lands, all these fetch lands, all these foils and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I guess we could take those. Okay, so I go over and talk to the owner. I'm like, hey, if I get all these expansions, I'm going to trade some Magic cards in. Cut me a deal because it's 3 expansions that are $50. You know, they were MSRP, like $50. He's like, I'm not going to cut you a deal because those are out of print now, so they're going to sell eventually. I don't care if they sit there and collect dust forever. I mean, the owner said that to me with a straight face. I was like, okay, I'll think about these. So I walk back over to the Magic place or Magic counter, and I'm like, hey, check out these cards. Well, you know, the guy that does the Magic cards isn't here today. Can you come back tomorrow? I'm like, no, I don't live here. I'm here for work. You know, I was just interested in getting a couple things, but I don't really want to fork out the cash. Well, I guess I could call him because, you know, we're always interested in high-end stuff like that. And so the owner's like, well, you know, he's going to have to come down and look at him. So either you come back tomorrow or no deal. Like, he just said it like that. And I'm like, really? I'm like, you guys aren't interested in any of this stuff? Like, 3 Transmute artifacts I was willing to trade, like 3 or 4 of the foil Theros gods, some EDH staples. I had a foil Palancron in there that I'm like, you know, I don't really care about this. I'm like, well, I guess I won't get anything. He's like, well, yeah, if you're not going to get anything, he's like, then you probably shouldn't loiter around here. That's what the owner said to me. You know, like, I'm not dressed like a hobo. I'm dressed in my business casual work attire with probably a binder that's, you know, worth $5,000+, and I'm trying to say, okay, shut up and take my money for these cards so I can get these expansions that have been sitting over here and collecting dust and they're sun bleached. So that was my wonderful experience. That just put me in a really bad mood.
Does it ever strike you that maybe Hurley's got some kind of pheromone that just brings out the a-hole in people? Because, man, man, this doesn't happen to me. This just doesn't happen to me. I don't know.
Yeah, first of all, he does. Secondly, Matt, you're just going to have to bite the bullet and start your own store like you've always talked about.
I'm like, maybe that's what it takes. I mean, if it wasn't so packed down here, you know, there's six or seven stores down here. Most of them suck. If it wasn't so, I mean, and that is the God's honest truth. I'm just like, okay, so somebody literally is coming in here and say, I will pay you money for these that you haven't sold. And he admitted, he's like, oh, they've been sitting here for 14 months, like those expansions. So something you haven't sold. And, you know, somebody's trying to work out a deal with you and you're just like, get the fuck out of my store.
Yeah, well, wow. maybe he just didn't enjoy the cut of your jib. I mean, that's happened several places we've gone.
Oh, yeah. And that happens a lot to me. I think what does Lauren push? She's like, you know, you strike people as shiesty. That's what she said.
Shiesty.
I would agree. And that's a great use of the, nouveau English language, I guess. Shiesty.
Yeah. It's a good way. Now, the merchant of Louisville.
Good way to describe that. All right. Well, while Matt was trying to get all hijinksy on the road and shiesty, I was actually playing the borrowed Nia Burn deck from Brian at our Modern FNM this past weekend. It went great, Brian. Thanks for sending the deck. I appreciated it. It was a lot of fun to play, so much different than my normal play patterns. That's why I enjoy breaking out. The only problem that I had, the only thing that separated me from that undefeated mark, like I said, was for some reason, the old man who hadn't been playing a lot lately, I forgot that modular actually uses the stack. For some reason, I thought it was an ability that I couldn't respond to. So when he went to sack his Arcbound Ravager and put all the tokens on the 1/1 flyer with lifelink, and obviously Burn can't be having that, I just went too early with the lightning bolt, and then he responded with the sack instead of letting it go vice versa. Something that I know, but it's one of the downsides to not playing for 3 months. And then you're like, wait a minute, maybe I need to go now. Nope, I just lost that game. But other than that, it was a lot of fun. And the deck's got reach. The deck has power. And the mirror match is interesting. It didn't come up during the FNM run. So I just played a quick match after it was over against a deck that was probably 73 of the same cards. And it's very interesting now, with Lightning Helix being a staple on when you respond and how much mana they have open. So it very much becomes a game of chicken almost. And it turns out that in the mirror matches, the game sort of stalls at one point, and it's the player, ironically, that has more land in play that's usually better off, because price of progress isn't a thing in Modern. So you don't have to worry about getting priced out. So it was very interesting the way that came down and how Boros Charm upsets the math by being the 4-damage spell.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Sean, were you running the sideboard? What's the one that prevents people from gaining life?
Those are main deck. The Skullcracks, those are main deck.
Yeah, Skullcracks.
Yeah.
Okay. Question about the burn decks. Would you have been able to find a spot for Harsh Mentor? I've always wondered that.
You know, that's a great point, and I was going to pick some up for the deck, and I got to thinking about it, and the one card that you don't want to take out is the 2/2 from original Zendikar that gains you a life whenever somebody plays a red spell. I can see the art, and I can't think of the name for some reason. That card is so invaluable in the mirror match that you can't go without it. And the proliferation of artifacts across the format means that Revelry is a 4-of staple in the sideboard as well, because you can slow down their board presence while continuously dealing them damage and having that sort of snowball, that I just don't know where Harsh Mentor would fit in. Do you make room for it in the main deck? Maybe, because Lava Spike is very uninspiring, but is it just necessary as another 3-damage spell for density? I don't know that much about the deck, just picking it up here and there. But I know I talked with some other people who'd played the deck more than I do, and they're also experimenting with trying to get the right amount of Harsh Mentor.
Brian, what are your thoughts on that, since that's your deck?
No, I think Sean's right on. I think Lava Spike has to be there for density, because at some point the burn deck, it's just a bald-faced lie, you know. Or it's just the most honest deck out there, one of the two. You're burning your opponent, and at some point your opponent has to expect you to be drawing those burn spells, whether it's Lightning Bolt, whether it's Lightning Helix, whether it's Lava Spike. That's what the deck does. If you cheat on those, I think that just makes everything else on the deck worse, especially Monastery Swift Spear. It just doesn't work as well. When you're in a non-aggressive mode with that deck, that's when you feel like you're just dirtling around doing nothing. Even though you're doing more than what another deck might be doing, I just don't think it's much. So I'm with you, Sean. The Harsh Mentors seem like it's a pretty good idea. I just don't know how it would play out in practice, and that's something I would explore if I wanted to take it to a GP or to an SCG Open or something like this. I'm curious to see how some of those other cards could work in there, because I know some people don't run like the Atarka's Command. Some people run four Helixes. I'm only running three. The mana bases are just a tiny bit different. But Sean's right. The Skullcracks have to be main deck now. There's just so much in Modern that gains life, and if you can prevent your opponent from doing that even once, you're ahead for sure. It's an interesting deck, even though everybody says it's so simple, but there's a lot of play to it, even against Affinity and the stack with Modular. So Sean, yeah. I get that. That's a tough one. That matchup I've seen go like 50-50, just like almost who's on the draw versus who's on the play a lot of times. So that can be one of those to go. So yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that was the one change I made. I moved the second Grim Lavamancer that you had main to the board and moved the fourth Lightning Helix to the main. So that sure. was, I did swap that just because of my preferred play pattern, and I've played Blue-Red Delver Burn in Legacy, and I thought it would play closer to that. The other thing that was interesting, and I know this MTG that we played this week section is getting very long in the tooth this week, but I think this was just worth bringing up real quickly, and that is that the way Burn plays out in Modern, I had a match against Merfolk, it was nice to be favored. I feel like having played that matchup in both Modern and Legacy, Merfolk with the free spells is favored in Legacy, even though you have more powerful burn spells. Their lineup of creatures and Aether Vial is identical to what they have in Legacy. It's the free counter spells that put them over the top, I feel, in that match, whereas Burn is favored, I think, as much as 60-40 in Modern, and I did end up taking that Merfolk match in what was a long three games because he kept spreading seizing my dual lands, and so yep. I was just left unable to use those white-red spells, but I eventually got there on the back of a whole bunch of, ironically, just, you know, one mana red, do three damage spells. Uninspiring, but they got the job done anyway. That was the Magic that we played this weekend. Hopefully you had a great chance to get out and play some of your own. We've got some Patreon news before we get to tournaments and news this week. First of all, we're going to start with congratulations as Matt opens up the spreadsheet and we get ready for this week's Patreon raffle. Congratulations and thank you so much to Brian Drelling. Brian pledged $5 a month to us on Patreon. Brian, you can now get the before and after show blather as we post it up the night that we record on Patreon. That'll be up tonight. You're also in for a number of other things as well and other opportunities. So thank you very much, Brian, for jumping in. And thanks to Joey Ruckel. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. R-U-E-C-K-L. He had initially pledged at one level and then updated that almost immediately to pledge at the $10 a month level. So Joey, thank you so much for your time and your hard-earned dollars and funneling some of them towards us on Patreon for tryhards. You, going forward in the future, can be invited to events like this Sunday's stream hangout for tryhards at the $10 and above Patreon levels. Matt's going to jump on and originate our stream this Sunday, noon Eastern. All the details will be online at the Patreon page. Brian is actually going to be with me this weekend, so you'll get two-headed monster commentary from the Peanut Gallery while Matt plays on Sunday. That's going to be noon Eastern time on Sunday for the Tryhards stream this month in June. All right, Matt, you got the scheme open for our raffle this week. You've got the list in front of you.
I do, in fact, and I want to bring up to the patrons, just to reiterate this, these are actually everybody that was processed on June 1st. So if you just joined in June, we had a lot of people join in June. When it hits on July 1st, that's actually when we're going to be drawn for the previous month, if that makes sense to everybody.
Yep, this is, you have to be in good standing in order to be invited. So that's actually not only going to happen with the stream this Sunday, but also with this raffle drawing as well. We love Legacy on Tryhards, and one of the recent resurgences in Legacy have been the return of Blade decks. Those are popularized and powered by Stoneforge Mystic. Matt is going to put up his GP promo, Stoneforge Mystic, for this week's Patreon raffle. Matt, you have the list in front of you. How many sides on my 30-sided die are we using tonight?
We're using 23.
Ooh, 23. That's an expansion over 21, I think we used last time. So here we go. Let me get it ready to roll. That's a practice roll. And we're going to... 19.
So this is the first... We finally had somebody at the $20 level win. Jason Ernstem.
Thank you so much for your patronage. Congratulations. We'll be getting a hold of you to get your information for the GP promo Stoneforge Mystic. You would think that we would try to like rig the dice and reward the Hart of Famers, but we just haven't been able to get that done.
No, and in fact, since they each get three entries, I've actually been alternating the numbers so they're not all like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Hoping that one of them would kind of get lucky, and it just hasn't worked out that way.
Well, there's one thing we're not doing. It's rigging it here on Tryhards. Maybe we have to look into that going forward. I know somebody who's a wizard with algorithms and so forth. Maybe we can get that rigged up. Jason, we'll be getting in touch with you for your information. Congratulations, and Matt will be sending out, well, we hope he'll be sending out that GP promo Stoneforge Mystic very soon. That brings us up to this week's tournament news. Guys, it was Team Limited GPs this weekend, one in Cleveland and one in Sydney. In Cleveland, a up-and-coming team that may one day prove to be good at this game, called the Peach Garden Oath, was able to knock off Burkhart, Nakamura, and Yuza 2-0. I kid, of course. That Peach Garden Oath is famously Owen Turtenwald, Huey Jensen, and Reed Duke. Three of the best players alive today. It's no surprise that the highly powered, highly skilled teams tend to do well, not only in team formats, but in limited team formats. In Sydney, 284 teams, about half the 536 that were in Cleveland, as Wilkes, Lindsbury, and Schroeder took home the title down under. Brian, what was the most memorable thing to you from this weekend? Was it LSV's team of Pat Cox and Josh Utter-Layton coming in heartbreakingly sixth in Cleveland while LSV was trolling Hurley's pick, Paul Cheon, by wearing Cheon's Channel Fireball jersey while playing? This was interesting all the way around, and it showed that...
That
was great.
I laughed so hard when I saw that.
LSV, who was your boy, your donkey, in our early Pro Tour pick'ems that you rode to win after win after win, he's obviously still got the chops, even though he's been in the booth for a while.
Yes, he has. And I tell you what, it just pains me every time I hear the commentary. I'm like, see, this is why you should be playing. This is why you should be playing, because you know exactly what should happen. You know exactly what should happen. So, no, it was great to see him slinging cardboard in Cheon's jersey. That was fantastic. I was so impressed with the Peach Garden Oath, I have to say. Sean, I know you just have that special place in your heart for Turtenwald. To have some people of the stature of Reed Duke and Huey Jensen kind of do double duty in the booth and at the tables, and they can kind of do it all, you know, get some more accolades. I think that's actually pretty cool. One of the best things I saw from this weekend was actually a tweet by Reed Duke. I don't know if you saw this. Reed Duke said, "From where I'm sitting," and I'm paraphrasing here, "from where I'm sitting, it's incredible to me just how good Jensen and Turtenwald are." And that's coming from Reed Duke, who everybody obviously considers one of the best players alive today, as Sean said. So for him to tweet that out is actually pretty cool. So that was actually kind of a fun thing to show up on the Twitter feed, so I really enjoyed that.
Hurley, is it worth watching Limited in order to see that team dynamic that was on display over the weekend?
This is another one of those formats absolutely worth watching, but very rarely will you run into a team tournament like what is set up here. So I think it's 100% worth watching. I think probably the highlight of the weekend for me, and it was actually at the end of the weekend, was when they asked, I think it was Reed Duke, what's the secret to winning a GP or something like that? And he goes, be on the same team as the rest of the Peach Garden. No.
Well, if there's one guy who's always going to be humble about the accolades, the power of the team that he's on, we know that's going to be Reed Duke. That was a lot of fun this weekend to catch some of the limited team GPs in both Cleveland and Sydney. This weekend, it's a big one. Star City Games Season 1 Invitational. This is all going on in Roanoke. The Envy itself is going to be a combination of Modern and Standard. There's also going to be a Modern Open there this weekend. So this is also, guys, coincidentally, the last SCG or GP to feature Standard until Hour of Devastation is released. So the Standard that's on display this weekend will be kind of a ship in a bottle because it will be the last thing before we get more from Hour of Devastation, about half of which has been previewed already, and we're going to talk about that coming up in a bit. Before we get there, though, there was one item sort of old news on the docket coming out of GP Vegas, and that was the Magic Art Show. Matt, you had looked into this quite a bit. You'd spent some time conversing and exchanging information with Mike Linneman, Vorthos Mike, and I know you wanted to kind of wrap up some things and some swirling talk that had surrounded the Magic Art Show coming out of the GP Vegas weekend.
I'd work with Vorthos Mike and Brian. We actually tried to get Mike on the show to kind of do a quick interview. Those guys, I'll tell you this much, were working their absolute butts off to get this show up and running. This was completely a proof of concept show for them. And they just wanted to say, look, this is possible to do. But when they did it, they were just so busy that it was very difficult to kind of take away their time from everything. Tried my to help them out on some things when I could, but I wish we could have done more. Mike did a big art show recap on Twitter, and if you go on to Vorthos Mike and follow up on it, they walk you through it. They show some of the great art. There was over 200 sketches, artworks, paintings, sketchbooks, basically over 200 pieces there. They had to do it on a shoestring budget. Their Kickstarter hit, which I was the backer on their Kickstarter, the Kickstarter was just over $20,000, I believe it, what the in total was. If you know anything about setting up any events, that was a shoestring budget if I've ever seen one. And that $20,000 was all-inclusive. So it was to ship all the artwork out there. It was to set up the walls, set up lighting. Channel Fireball was providing the room, so they had that. But the vast majority of it was going to be freight. Now, mind you, most of this art was privately owned. It was not donated by the artist. Some of it was, but a lot of it was privately owned, and people had lent it to the art show to actually have an art show. You know, most of these pieces, I think some of these cheapest pieces were $800+. You know, some of the most expensive pieces, I think Mike said was there was a few $12,000 pieces in there. Extrapolate that cost out. They did a hell of a job. Since they were doing this proof of concept, they did surveys. They kept logs of everything that was going on. They also had cosplayers out there. They did a lot of different things. The one thing they did not do, and people were kind of blown away by it, was they did not have a donation box. Mike just said, we want people to come in because they want to come in. We don't want to have them feel obligated to donate, and then we want this as a proof of concept. A lot of people took to Twitter and said, where do I donate money? Why, you know, how can I help them? He posted a lot of the feedback surveys. They handed out feedback surveys. Genius move on his part, by the way. What was better? What was good about it? What could have been better? What? How they found out about it? All this basic information. He's got tons of pictures on here. I just go through this. Hop on Twitter if you have a Twitter account, just to give you an idea. They had a total of, and this might be non-unique visitors, but they had a total of about 1,700 people come through the art show. All of it was amazing. I think they proved their proof of concept, and they're going to try to do it more often now, maybe like once a year or whatever the funds will allow. The reason I want to bring it up, though, was I also saw a lot of negative pieces. A lot of people said, I donated $50 to the art show. I got myself a playmat. I got a playmat too, but I got myself a playmat and I got some some tokens and things like that. But where did $20,000 go? I mean, you guys, they were shooting a little bit of negativity towards them. Just to put it in perspective, when I was talking to Mike and Brian, they said a standard art show, we did some research, a standard art show is anywhere between $200,000 and $500,000 just to put on. And that's not including the pieces of art that go into it. And he goes, that's to ship them. That's to set up lighting, temporary walls, you know, get the space and everything. They did it on $20,000. Amazing job, guys. I wish one of us could have been out there. I wish we could have done more. We came up with some ideas behind the scenes. We just didn't have time to implement them. What they're hoping to do now is that when they do the 25th anniversary in next year, I almost said in 2018 because I'm like, oh, that's like 2 years off. When they do 25th anniversary, they're talking about wanting to do a Dominaria art show, a before and after Dominaria art show. I think that'd be amazing. They want to get a lot of the original art that's floating around out there in the hands of private collectors. So check this out. I can't say enough highly about it. I've always wanted to own original art, and this has definitely made it much higher on my list of where I'm like, you know, I could sell a couple dual lands that I'm not using, own a piece of original art, something I just absolutely love.
I think when you say proof of concept, they absolutely accomplished that. This isn't something that can happen at every GP or every pro tour, but as an event that expands the community, something that we try to be constantly focused on here on Tryhards. This is something that gives the community another opportunity for expansion, and I would love to see that continue going forward. Great job to those guys, and they still obviously have the opportunity for you to donate. Follow the links that Hurley talked about, and you can check that out. Guys, Wizards has a big job on their hand. Not only do they make the world's best game, but they also have to curate it when it comes to it being an IP, an intellectual property. I'm going to ask you guys a big picture question right now, and Brian, I'm going to let you hit lead off. Earlier this month, there was a lot of tournaments going on, a lot of other Magic news coming out, so we kind of put this on the back burner for this week. The announcement was made that Cryptic Studios was taking on the Magic the Gathering MMORPG. They're already known for doing Star Trek Online, amongst other things. And while there is some quibbling over how well they did with that, it's almost universally acknowledged that they got the flavor of sort of starship battles right in that Star Trek MMO. If you were Wizards and you had things like HasCon coming up September 8th through the 10th, and you had other big events coming up, maybe even a movie in the works, no one knows for sure. I'm not asking you what you should do with the MMO, but Brian, what big ideas, what big picture ideas would you be pursuing if you were Wizards to leverage your intellectual property known as Magic the Gathering?
Oh, man. What a great question. I think you hit on the major ones. And the one that springs to mind right here is kind of like the virtual reality where you could enter the battlefield as kind of the wizard that you are with your decks. I've often thought about, like, you know, as we're playing Magic, everybody has this idea of the spells you're casting. What would that look like in 3D? What does that look like, you know, if we were actually on the plane that this is happening on? That would be a great thing to do, I think, if we're playing Magic in kind of a 3D virtual reality world where you're surrounded by kind of your legions of zombies or your enchantments that are just locking your opponents out of everything, and you're kind of what, standing on your little plateau as one of your lands or something with your planeswalker next to you commanding, you know, he or she to do something. I think that would actually be a really, really fun thing to engage in.
Seems like that is something that the MMO might try to capture the flavor of, but we're not quite there with the technology for that VR yet. But I think everybody who's ever played Magic has had that same desire to feel that way. Yep. And I know that I have as well. Matt, if you're Wizards, what big project are you pursuing, whether they've done it or not? What big next step would you like to see taken with the Magic the Gathering IP?
A mobile game. We're years behind that, but unfortunately that necessitates a completely stable, I guess, non-exclusive, non-expensive online version of the game. But the mobile game as a whole, I mean, it just blows my mind that, you know, I can play Eternal. I can play, which is very, very similar to Magic. I can play Soulforge. I can play Hearthstone on my tablet, but I can't play Magic the Gathering. I understand there's technical difficulties there, but get your online IP, you know, your IP that is your base game, get that right. I will admit they've taken a lot of large steps. They've got this Magic Digital Next situation coming out that nobody really knows what it is, and everyone's kind of thinking that they're going to make a large announcement during HasCon, but I think that's where it's at. And then the other one is you use your IP to tie everything together. I've harped on this. Why they don't have a card in there that provides a free draft, like in every six packs, you know, on that wasted backer card that, or that, you know, that wasted card that they have inside the booster packs. Something. I mean, you have to tie all these IPs together. I think they think that with the MMO, I play those Cryptic Studios MMOs every now and then, and they're not the best by any means, but they captured, they absolutely captured the spirit of those games. They had Neverwinter as well, which was a D&D based one, mm-hmm. captured the spirit of that game. I think it'd be a huge, huge mistake if they don't tie in the MMO that is supposed to be happening. If they don't tie that in and say, oh, you know what, you completed this raid, so guess what, go over to mtgo.com and get your free I don't know, your free background, something like that. And a lot of these places do that, a lot of these companies do that. Blizzard does that really well, where if you're playing like their Heroes of the Storm, which is their League of Legends style card or games, they tie that in with Diablo, they tie that in with StarCraft, they tie that in with World of Warcraft. And you get special skins if you do something in one game. I mean, essentially stuff that costs them almost nothing, but it encourages you to go explore the other games within their larger umbrella of games. So if they don't tie all that in together, you know, they don't tie in the Magic movie. I've said this. I beat this in. If they're not there handing out promo packs of cards to everyone that comes in the door at every movie theater, they have wasted so much marketing potential that it's not even funny. So the big one is, I don't think that there's one particular thing. I just think that they need to tie all of their marketing power, whether it be under Hasbro or be under Wizards of the Coast, tie it all together so that it becomes a better game as a whole.
Hurley, I want you to be there for that negotiation as Michael Bay is signing to direct, which you know is going to happen. He'll have to be out handing out packs of Magic cards.
I dropped my beer. I swear, if Michael Bay, I might fly out to WotC and just hold a picket sign that if they announce that Michael Bay is going to direct that.
The one-man picket line, Matt Hurley. Well,
yeah,
at least he won't be cheesing off LGS owners while he's out there standing in front of the Renton headquarters. You know, what comes around to me, and Brian, you're probably going to double down on this with me, because of our age and what we grew up with. And yes, someone else has already done a lengthy treatise on this, and I will point you his direction because he went to it much more than I can right now on this cast, is why isn't there a Magic the Gathering cartoon? Like a Saturday morning cartoon style.
Yeah.
You know, you had like D&D, you have Yu-Gi-Oh, you have all of these other things that, you know, are growing the game by getting younger people, younger kids interested just from a cartoon aspect, but it also sort of acts as an advertising vehicle first and foremost. I'm not looking for something that's necessarily going to be, you know, award driven, like you had several of the Batman series were critically acclaimed. If you can do both, sure, but if you can turn it into something that is child-friendly but also entertaining for the adult set, because you've seen many of the cartoons be able to kind of bridge that gap, I think that's where I'd like to see Magic go in the future. The professor at Tulare Community College actually did a very in-depth video on that topic and pointed out a lot of the history, so check that out. I'm not going to let him steal all the thunder because I've had that idea for quite a long time, but he did a great job of laying out the upside as far as marketing and retention and age of introduction when you have a vehicle like that, an animated vehicle that you can get in front of children and capture their imaginations first and introduce them to the card game on down the line. It has a lot of growth potential there. So that was something that's been in the notes for the show for quite a few weeks, but we had time to get to it this week. What would you do if you were Wizards for a day and you could sort of take the IP and direct it somewhere? Love to hear your feedback, either email or on the Patreon page. All the contact in the show notes. All right, from the big picture 30,000-foot view down to the microcosm of what we know about Hour of Devastation. Guys, with about half the set having been previewed as of the recording of this show, I want to ask you to get down and dirty in Hour of Devastation. What card do you think will be most impactful for Standard that we've seen spoiled so far? Now, the reason I say Standard is we've only seen half the set, and it takes a lot of brewing before you find something that's really going to influence older Eternal formats. Matt, I think you might have a pick that will do just that, but I'll kick it off, and then Brian, I'll look at you next. This one isn't a rare, but I think it's going to have a huge impact right out of the gate. A Braid. It's a one and a red, an instant. You get your choice. Deal 3 damage to target creature or destroy target artifact. Neither one of them are hyper-efficient at what they do, but for 2 mana at instant speed, getting the choice to destroy a creature with 3 damage or to destroy an artifact, hello Heart of Kirin, I think a Braid, when I look at this from a competitive point of view, is the early standout in my mind that's going to be quickly adopted and may, as an uncommon actually, kind of warp the format around it. It'll be interesting to see how this goes. Brian, is there a card standing out to you so far from the half the set we've seen previewed as of this recording?
The one that I really think is going to have to make some kind of a splash has got to be Nicol Bolas, God Pharaoh. I just know of so many players who are having physical ailments because they just can't get their hands on that card fast enough. But that's not the card that I want to talk about. I want to talk about the Locust God, the legendary creature. When you draw a card, create a 1/1 blue and red insect creature token with flying and haste. Then you can actually spend 4 to draw a card, discard a card, and when it dies, you return it to your hand. For 6, this seems like a very powerful effect because there's so many card draw effects in Standard right now. You've got Cathartic Reunion, you've got Glimmer of Genius, you've got all of, you know, the stuff from the blue-red control type deck. This just looks like people are going to get swarmed out with this army of insects. So I'm really curious to see if somebody picks this up and kind of puts it as a finisher in some kind of control deck or goes another direction and maybe tries to make some kind of an aggro deck with it.
Interesting. Anything with cycling actually causes you to draw a card and would then trigger Locust God as well.
Yes, so absolutely.
Don't forget about that. Very interesting. Matt, what's your pick?
All right, so I'm going to cheat a little bit here.
Shocking.
There's 2. I have a preferred one, but it all depends on how the format shakes out. The one that I prefer that I think is going to have the biggest impact is going to be Ahmed Eternal. Have you guys seen this one? It was spoiled in Chinese, I believe it is.
Yeah, that's the black 3-drop 5/5.
Yes. This is either going to just blow the doors off the zombie deck, or it's going to be in like the black-green Delirium style deck, or it's going to be in like a black-green Hapatra deck of some type. This has so many uses, and it's so powerful. This is going to be the card that you're going to have to figure out a way to make Fatal Push work so that it hits 3-drops. I'm blown away by it. The format goes more towards control. I think it's going to be Nimble Obstructionist. That's one you flash down for as either a chump blocker or to kill one of their best creatures. Or if it's you're going up against a mid-range deck or another control deck, it's an uncounterable stifle, essentially. Both these cards seem extremely, extremely powerful to me.
I'm glad you brought up Nimble Obstructionist, Matt. This is going to be our lightning round poll of the night. Because it is a casting cost of 2 and a single blue, lessening the requirements of Vendilion Click, does Nimble Obstructionist replace Vendilion Click in Eternal formats? Brian?
That's a great question, and I think it really does depend on, do you really need to know what's in your opponent's hand, or do you need to save yourself at the moment with the targeted activated triggered ability that you don't control? I could see making a case for either. Right now, Nimble Obstructionist seems really, really good, and I would say it could be maybe even a split. Maybe it's going to be like a 2 and a 1. Maybe that's going to go up to a full 4 and split it even as a 2 and 2. This is really, really powerful.
Matt, is Vendilion Click about to be Wally pipped by Nimble Obstructionist?
100% yes, for a multitude of reasons. A, in Legacy, it hits fetch lands. It hits mana ability, so that includes LEDs, Grizzlebrand activations. Uncounterable, it hits all of these. And it's a 3-1 flash. I mean, I think 100% this replaces Vendilion Click. Plus, the final nail in the coffin for Click, it's 2 colorless and a blue instead of blue colorless. It's not a huge deal in Legacy, but it does matter every now and then, especially when you're getting in these 4-color mana bases.
Well, that just means it just can go into a bunch of other decks where Vendilion Click cannot go right now. So at a pre-order of $5 right now, is this a good deal, Hurley?
No, it's a rare from an imprint set. even if this sees heavy, heavy, you know, Eternal play, and I'm not even talking just Legacy, I'm talking Modern too. I mean, it counters not as much stuff in Modern. If this drops to the $2 or $3 range, even if it sees heavy play, it might stick at that $5, but it's not going to go much higher. There's no benefit to pre-ordering it right now. I think that target price is $2 to $3. If this is a terrible draft set and nobody wants to open it or nobody wants to draft it, then yeah, this is going to drive up.
Should be very interesting to see how quickly Nimble Obstructionist finds a home. It's too powerful to go without one, and it's going to show up somewhere. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. The financial advice is already flowing, so let's just open up a vein and... Wait, what's this show note, Matt? You don't have an actual card? You have anything that pairs with a new card? Oh, yeah. You better show us something good here.
Solemnity. Players can't get counters. Counters can't be put on artifacts, creatures, enchantments, or lands. Probably one of the most influential cards that has been printed in the last 5 years. Tons of cards that this hits. Phyrexian Unlife is already spiked. Decree of Silence, it automatically flips your Dark Depths. The card itself is going to be one of those that's not crazy expensive. The foils will be just stupidly high. This is probably the most financially relevant card that's been printed in, I would say, 10 years.
58 episodes, Matt. 58 episodes. We've been doing tryhards, and you still haven't learned that 90% of what you just said won't be heard because the space for In the Elevator is 28 seconds.
I had to
edit it down to fit. I think you hate me is what I think that's proof of.
Because I could have sent you a card in the mail with that information.
You went on for 3 good minutes and you get 28 seconds.
Do you want me to do an actual card?
No.
I actually have a couple actual cards.
No, because... it's already done. By the time people are hearing us talk about this, they'll have already listened to this week's In the Elevator Solemnity here on Tryhards. I just wanted to blow you a little along the way, Matt.
Hey, you know what? If I'm wrong, I mean, this is one of those, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But it blows my mind about this card.
I clipped out the entirety of your rant to save for when it's a 15-cent rare a year from now, and then we can run it back on the show.
That's why, because I will buy every single one of those for 15 cents.
That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Our new EDH aficionado has us brewing with something from way back when, we were still new at this game. Brian, what do you got?
We were young lads when Urza's Legacy came out. And guys, this is a fun card that I wanted to touch on because I know that this has seen some Legacy play, namely at the Grand Prix in Vegas not too long ago. So we're looking at a common from Urza's Legacy, Unearth. 1 black, a sorcery, choose target creature card in your graveyard with total casting cost 3 or less, and put that creature into play. It also has cycling of 2. I know that this was a card that was championed by the likes of Noah Walker and Joe Lissette and a few others that took it to pretty high finishes at GP Vegas, but it still hasn't been tuned yet. Guys, what do you make of this? Is this going to make some splash in Legacy moving forward in the current metagame with all the targets of like True Name Nemesis, Leovold, Snapcaster Mage, etc.? Or is this kind of a flash in the pan? Hurley, I'm just going to keep riding that wave of emotion you got going off of Solemnity. What do you think? Unearth.
I think it'll show up here and there as a one-off. With Miracles being out of the formats, that means that it's safer to play the power, non-power style one drops, which, you know, your power one drops would be like Brainstorms, things like that, Spell Pierces. With Top gone and Miracles gone, I think you can safely play it. It'll never be more than a 1 or 2 of. If you're playing like Nimble Obstructionist, being able to cycle that, draw a card, and then play 1 black to get that back into play, I mean, that's not the worst play that's ever been made. It's not a terrible card, and it's very versatile. But like I said, I think it'll be kind of like that 1 or 2. It'll be the spice that'll be thrown into the decks, and it'll be the Sean Seacrest Shadow of Doubt level of play.
Hurley, I love that. That was fantastic. So, Sean, what do you think? Are you going plus or minus on Hurley's take on Unearth? Is it going to see more play or less play than what he said?
It's going to see less play than Shadow of Doubt. I mean, that Shadow of Doubt is a Hall of Fame level card that we as mere mortals just aren't smart enough, strong enough, to wield at the appropriate times. As a full-blown reanimator player in Legacy, I love everything on this card except for the fact that it only gets stuff back that's three or less. I mean, what do you really want to unearth at that point? Where's my Gristlebrand? You can't hit that up at that point. But I think where this card goes is in value decks. Matt hit that part on the head. And whether the Legacy value deck continues to be Sultai because of the power of Leovold, or it ends up being blue-black because of all the things you can do in there, from True Name Nemesis to Snapcaster Mage, and so on and so forth, I think that this card is definitely a resource-grindy, heavy card. Maybe it ends up being adopted in the Deathcloud decks at some point as a way to get back something that you intentionally intended to sacrifice with Deathcloud. Maybe it's something that just allows you to continue to grind out your opponent through an EBT ability. Whether that EBT ability is protection or gives you another flashback off of a spell, we'll have to see where that goes. I mean, just reanimating Baleful Strix with this isn't the worst thing in the world. It gives you velocity as well as a defense going on your side of the board. That might not be your ideal situation, but in a pinch, I can think of worse plays than one black mana to get a 1-1 flying death touch and draw a card at the same time. So anything that's oriented around value, I think Matt's right that this is going to be a one or two of. It's not powerful enough to make it a four of staple index.
Yeah, I think both of you are right on the head with this. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I see this functioning more of in either a black-white Deathblade deck or an Esper Deathblade deck, because the target that I see with this is Stoneforge Mystic. How many times do you get to cast Stoneforge Mystic, go to get an equipment, and prior to being able to activate putting the equipment from your hand onto the battlefield, that your Stoneforge gets lightning bolted or gets pushed or gets you name it, for one black to return this to the battlefield and trigger that ability yet again and get yet another equipment into the mix, I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on opponents. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how that works out in those Deathblade style decks. There's a lot of good targets for it.
Unearth, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Tryhards. That brings us up to the end of the show. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? Did you develop a love of 7-mana bombs?
You know, I must say that casting Zurgo Helmsbreaker is pretty fun when he's a 7-2 haster and people are looking at you going, yep, you got a Zurgo. And I'm like, yes, I do. And here he comes. That's pretty fun. No, I would say I did something that I haven't done in a while. I've gotten off of like competitive Magic when I'm doing my workout in the morning that I usually watch online. And I actually pulled up Joe Lissette's Orzman 79 Twitch stream that he does. And he was talking about the GP in Vegas. And guys, I found it absolutely fascinating because he was talking about not only the deck he was playing, which included this Unearth, which is where I got the idea from, but also he was talking about all of the judge interactions happening at the GP. And as people know, and he will readily admit to, Joe Lissette claims that he has more judge interactions than maybe the more common player does, whether he's around them, involved in them, that he calls them, whatever. He just says, you know, they just seem to be in my sphere more often than not. And some of them I thought I was kind of rolling my eyes as I was listening to them. And some of them I was like, he's making really, really good points here. And so I think it's that old tried and true adage of, if you are at a competitive event, never be afraid to call a judge. It's to clear up things. You have no control whether your opponent gets mad at you for calling a judge. It will be forgotten about very soon after. But to try to clear up any discrepancy that's happening in the game state of this very, very complicated game, I think it's always a good thing to remember that judges are there to help and for the integrity of the game. So that was really, really insightful. I'm not saying that I agree with every last thing that he brought up there, but I appreciate how he documented the judge interactions that he was involved in over the course of the 4 days at the GP, including one where he was in a team sealed event, and apparently in between games of the team sealed, the other team switched decks and a judge was called and the judge said, yep, you can do that. And so he was kind of like, yeah, I just think that's pretty much wrong 9 ways till Sunday, but what are you going to do when the judge says it's okay? So yeah, I found that to be very, very strange that we're all not perfect out there in the world, no matter what our judge level says on our shirt.
Matt, what'd you do to get better at magic this week?
You know, Brian, you stole mine, because actually there was a there was an article, and I was trying to find it earlier today and I could not, but that talked about calling a judge, why it's fine.
Paulo Vitor wrote about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he wrote about calling a judge, and I always tell people before the game, I'm like, look, I do have, you know, a lot of times I'll be playing like a foreign foil. If you're unfamiliar what it does, please call a judge. I will show you the Oracle text. But if you have any question at all, call a judge. It's not going to hurt my feelings. Essentially, he said, I call judges still, just because even though I'm 99.999% sure of how it works, I want to verify that that's how it's going to work. I went to a PPTQ about 5 weeks ago. I had a harsh mentor, and he had a channeler initiate. I called a judge because I was like, hey, I'm 99% sure that that's a mana ability, but since you actually have to remove the -1/-1 counter on it to activate the mana ability on channeler initiate, does that count as a mana ability? He kind of huffed and puffed a little bit. My opponent did. He's like, you know, we're wasting time. I'm like, the judge will gladly give us 3 minutes. And this guy was a level 3, I believe, level 2 or level 3. And I've had a lot of interactions with him. He always does a great job explaining it. And he was actually training a level 1 there. And so it was a great learning experience for him. He added on there, and he, you know, like I said, my opponent kind of huffed and puffed about it. I'm like, look, I just wanted to double check so we were both sure. He's like, well, you should know that that doesn't do that. I'm like, you just need to calm down a little bit. Like, I just wanted to double check about it. And afterwards, he came up, and he's like, no, he's like, you were right. I'm sorry. I was kind of mad because, you know, we were going, getting ready to go to time. But then he did add like 4 minutes onto our clock about it. And so it's always okay to call a judge. And especially if I hit a new player, I always say, call a judge if you have any questions. Call a judge, call a judge. Reading that, it just made me feel better to hear one of the best players in the world say, it's okay to call a judge. I still call judges on myself. And I still, I still always want to make sure how exactly an interaction works, even though I'm 100% sure.
Great advice from both. Always call the judge. Now, if you're in the state of Illinois, we're used to only getting that good ruling if you've donated to the judge's political campaign. But at a magic event, you can certainly feel free to call a judge, and they'll be more than helpful with you and to you and for you and your match and your opponent along the way. So that's great advice. Guys, I don't know if you've had this opportunity or not, but I had this at FNM. Rachel was there, my Padawan. She hadn't won an FNM match prior to this week. So she rolls in with the deck that we had been practicing on. It was just a black-green value deck. All of the best hits, Thoughtseize, Tarmogoyf, Liliana the Veil, Grim Flayer, you know, all of those big, heavy-hitting black-green cards. The deck was not only good, but I was trying to teach her about the tension that you can have in the deck between a card like Tarmogoyf that wants to rely on the graveyard and a card like Gurmag Angler, who can use your graveyard as a resource. So the deck was not only good, but it was supposed to be teaching her something, and she learned it. Boom, round one, gets paired up with the consensus best player in the shop, walks his dog 2-0. I was never more proud at that moment, and he admitted it. I mean, Lucas is a great guy. I come over, I go, what happened? He looked at me, he goes, I got my kicked is what happened. So she was just beaming from ear to ear and had a big smile on her face, and it was kind of that moment. And now she didn't complete the journey and take it down, but it'll come in time. And she did admit that she was much more comfortable playing against archetypes that we had tested versus later in the tournament when she had to play somebody with their homebrew that she had never seen those cards. She wasn't really sure what her role was at that point, because we talk a lot about what's your role in a match at a certain point. But just to have her get over the hump and not only do it, but do it against the consensus best player in the room as well, playing his very good Sultai Death Shadow deck. So it wasn't like she took down some pile of junk. She took down the consensus best deck in Modern and the best player in the room 2-0 in that matchup. And it was just a really proud moment for me. And it kind of validated some of the work that we've been putting in together and made me feel good about what I know. And sometimes it's not knowing that you know it. Sometimes it's knowing that you're correct in the way you communicate information, you think about the game, that reinforces the lessons that you've been teaching and the lessons that you're learning while you teach them as well. And I know Brian could go on forever about being a teacher in those moments and how they sort of reinvest in yourself while you're investing in other people. And I'm sure that's something we'll get to when we have the opportunity in the future. But take those moments when you get them. Help grow the game. Help teach someone new, because they'll be repaid to you in ways that you can't even imagine when those opportunities arrive. Oh, you brave soul, making it all the way through a long and winding episode 58 of Tryhards. We'll see you again next week here on Tryhards.